Welcome to Everything is Changing, the podcast where we explore how our world is evolving toward a more sustainable future. I'm your host, Ahmetcan Uzdaşık. Each episode, we focus on key areas driving this transformation: circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water. Join us for conversations with experts, journalists, and change makers who are creating solutions for a regenerative and resilient world.
Everything is changing.
Today, we are joined by Giacomo Lozzi, an advisor and researcher dedicated to making cities more livable and sustainable. Based in Brussels, Giacomo works across Europe on policies and projects that support cleaner, smarter urban mobility, from sustainable transport to city logistics. With experience in nonprofits, public institutions, and academia, he brings a practical and holistic view to the future of how and why we move. In this episode, we'll talk about the true meaning of sustainable mobility, who bears the responsibility for change, and how solutions like cargo bikes and EU policy can reshape our cities. Giacomo Lozzi, welcome. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with the basics. Sustainable mobility became a buzzword in the last years, as you know. Everyone is talking about it from a different perspective. Personally, when we talk about sustainable mobility, I always tend to think it is related to reducing carbon emissions. But I think it is more than that. Can you explain what it really means?
Indeed, this is a very relevant topic, and it's becoming more evident in the last years. This complexity has always been. When we talk about mobility, we are really talking about the ability to access opportunities, services, and connections that make our lives better. But there's already quite a relevant difference between transport, that is how we move, and accessibility, that is why we move. So to access jobs, to access services, or in general community life. So this is really important that when we talk about sustainable mobility policies, we talk about the empowerment and how to enable people to access services and places and goods. So the transport is a means for this, but the real buzzword should be accessibility. And when we talk about sustainability, we're not only about talking about environmental aspects, that is something that often sort of confusion, but we talk about three dimensions: the environmental one, of course, but also economic feasibility and social equity as well. So a solution or a measure or policy can be green, but if it's not socially just or economically viable, it's not really sustainable. So in order to have sustainable mobility, we have to consider sustainable access to solutions that are provided in a way that is environmentally, economically, and socially sound.
I was surprised to learn that 70% of carbon emissions come from transport and energy, with road vehicles responsible for 75% of transport-related emissions. Do these figures, in your opinion, suggest that tackling climate change is impossible without a major shift toward a sustainable mobility?
Transport is one of the major sources of greenhouse gases emissions, but also of other pollutants, mainly related to air quality. And what is also very relevant is that in cities, it's about one quarter, depending on the sources, but of emissions coming from transport, and overall emissions coming from transport sector are still increasing despite the solutions that have been put in places over the year to overcome it. So it's quite worrying. So indeed, the addressing transport is very essential to address the overall climate crisis. There have been different trends lately, over the last decades, on improving urban mobility and make it more sustainable. For example, there are shifts towards shared mobility. There's a steady move from car ownership to shared solutions like car sharing, bike sharing, or on-demand transport, micro-mobility solutions like e-scooters. But these are still very niche solutions. And a very large and mass solution, we will still have problems in cities. There are some enablers that can make transport more efficient, like smart data-driven applications. Real-time data help to model trips. There are platforms that now make you integrate options of transport, combining transport like public transport and car sharing, for example. There's electrification of both public fleets. You see many more electric buses, also electric vans, even trucks sometimes. There are new and faster charging infrastructure solutions. There are cargo bikes that are also used as a, in some cases, can be used as replacement for both family trips, but also professional trips. There are more low emission zones, fewer parking spaces. So there are many cities that are taking bold solutions to address the issues of private cars, also as a source of pollution, also as a way to make cities more livable. But this is not enough. You can see that a fewer cities are taking the initiatives, are quite brave, but we have to empower all the medium and smaller sized cities to take action as well, because in the end, Europe in particular is made of these smaller cities that often not have the capacity to take this radical change.
I think this is a very important point. There are different layers to this. And when it comes to making this shift happen, what I mean is sustainable mobility, who is actually responsible? Is it down to individuals like you and me making greener choices? Or should the weight fall more on local governments, national governments, or even an international corporation? Like all these climate negotiations and everything, COPs and climate meetings, who is really actually responsible here?
That's a very tricky question and very good one. It's I would say in one word, it's everyone at the different levels. I think what is most important is to understand what I was mentioning before, the fact of accessibility, but also there are two more A's that are now becoming more and more visible in the discussion around mobility transitions. Is besides accessibility, it's affordability and availability. So in order to make a smooth transition, transport options should be available to everyone. There shouldn't be high costs that affect households' budgets. And there shouldn't be a limited access that cuts people off from essential services and opportunities. So we have to ensure that everyone is not obliged to make a choice, but so we shouldn't restrain always people, but we should give them the chance and the opportunity to choose what is best for them. And this often corresponds to what is also best for the society overall. So what happened in the past is that the digital green transitions widened or at least risked to widen the social divide. Because if you introduce the obligation to buy electric cars, not because you oblige people to buy electric cars, but because, for example, you introduce a zero emission zone, then you have to make this possible for people to buy it. And then if this kind of cars cost at least 20,000 euro and people don't have access points to charging points to recharge them, you're leaving people behind. So then taking this as an example, who is responsible for it? at the European level, there is a regulation called Alternative Fuel Infrastructure Regulation that demands member states in Europe to install a certain minimum number of charging points. So this is a part that at the European level can do. Then it's up to the national states to decide how this is deployed at their territorial level. But it's also in cooperation with the local authorities that have to find the best places to do it and also consider their specific territorial context. For example, if people that live in the outskirts can have access to this public access point and charging points, or if they're good enough with some incentives to install it at their places and so on. And then it's, of course, up to people to, when they are empowered to take this option, to make the right choice. But it's all connected and you cannot expect people to change if they don't have the means and also the knowledge to do that.
You gave a very comprehensive answer. Thank you. You talked about micro-mobility solutions. I know you worked a lot on cargo bikes. I read a lot of articles of yours. And also, I think you did a podcast episode even about the cargo bikes. Why do you think they're important? And do you think, realistically speaking, they can replace our car-centric world?
Thanks for the question. That's a project that I really enjoyed to be part of on cargo bikes. I worked on it also in other occasions, but in particular for Brussels region. It was a project co-funded by the European Commission. That's also another role that, for example, Europe can have to encourage the deployment of these solutions, is to fund the innovation and testing process of it. And so this was a project that the Brussels region took together with local stakeholders in Brussels to promote the use of cargo bikes as a placement for both family trips and but also business trips, as I mentioned before. In particular, for families with children, because Brussels has a very peculiar situation, like one out of two households don't own a car, but among the households with at least one child, 90% of the households own a car. So it's really related to the presence of a child. So it was not just about promoting bikes, but cargo bikes because of their link to transporting kids. And this is becoming more and more of a trend. You can see that easily to children up to a certain age, even 10, 12 years old, even adults can be in the back of these cargo bikes. And it's a very convenient way of moving. There are some issues linked to the cost. They are quite expensive. They are easily stolen. So people don't have also parking spaces to store them. This is another problem. There are cultural issues where a car is considered often more safe and also just more known as a way of moving. And also people don't know sometimes, especially older generations, how to ride a bike. So there are many challenges, and the project was trying to promote the culture of the cargo bikes. And now you see there are more and more, and of course it's a starting point. And it's the same also for service trips, like you can be a maintenance repair guy using a cargo bike. Of course, it's not for all the jobs. You have to also not be too radical when you promote this kind of solutions. You really have to target the ones that can use the cargo bike because it's faster for them, because it's more convenient. And I think what is the key message is that you're not shifting because it's greener, but it's because it's more convenient, because the city made a policy or made a framework that for you as a user, as a professional, makes it easier to go around with a bike or cargo bike rather than a car or a van. So in this case, it was a project that started understanding how to do that. And I think there will be more and more cities going in this to this direction. Although, as I was saying before, it's all a matter of making it affordable and accessible, convenient in general for everyone.
You talked about the challenges of cargo bikes, but I think it's also same for all almost all sustainable mobility measures. When it comes to that, there is this challenge of accessibility and affordability. And I always think, like, when we talk about sustainable mobility solutions, it's always addressing middle class, but for the lower income communities, it is not easy for them to switch to more sustainable mobility options because of sometimes infrastructure or financial restraints. Can you maybe talk more about this?
I have the feeling that in the previous years, we focused mostly on the environmental dimension of sustainability, which is very crucial and very urgent. But as I said before, this cannot move forward without the social inclusion aspect. So indeed, as you mentioned, there are many solutions and many aspects of this transition that can be challenging for some parts of the population. So I think what is important is that we must avoid creating radical divides. Policymakers have a responsibility to make evidence-based decisions and keep people together, but they have to consider if they are leaving someone behind. So, for example, when it comes to people living in more rural areas or people that have a lower income, there should be solutions for that. One concrete example is something that is under refinement at the European level, is what is called the Social Climate Fund. That is a fund that is being set in place by the European Commission that tackles mobility poverty and supports sustainable solutions for vulnerable groups. It's not only tackling mobility, but also energy, that it's also quite relevant part of emissions in cities, and it's also a source of issues for households, how to pay the energy bills. But as we are focusing on the mobility dimension, this is relevant for us. And what is important is to define what is a measure, what is a solution that can be supported by such a fund. There are some examples. For example, there are some on-demand transport provided in rural Spain that give flexible mobility for smaller villages, or in France, there is an electric vehicle social leasing scheme that make electric vehicles accessible for lower income households. So this kind of solutions that member states can use through this fund to target the most vulnerable groups of their populations and make sure that they are not left behind in the transition. Now, this is easier to say than to do, and also there are some cultural barriers that that should be addressed in a more inclusive way, I would say. Because just to make an example, I don't know if you are aware of a planning concept of the 15 minutes city. So it's a concept that was proposed a few years ago that envisions urban areas where all the basic needs are accessible within 15 minutes by foot or bikes or public transport that can bring you everywhere in other areas within 15 minutes. This is in a very simplified definition what concept means. It also should promote local economies and stronger communities at the at the neighborhood level. So the idea was, the original idea of this concept was to empower more local communities and make neighbors stronger without centralizing everything in a city where the city center is more important. But for some people, it became a bit of a controversial idea, and it was perceived as a restrictive measure. Even some conspiracy theories claimed that it would limit freedom of movement of people. So this is not about confinement, but it should be about empowerment. But if these things and these good approaches are not communicated properly, and if some of the population perceives it as a limitation, it means that it's probably not well communicated, and politicians or policymakers are not designing policies that are co-created and co-designed in a way that is inclusive. So we have to be careful not to just decide for people, but make sure that people are on board with the decision-making process. Although then, as I mentioned before, policymakers have also the responsibility to make evidence-based decisions, because they have a mandate to do so, and so they also have to take bold decisions in this direction.
What you're saying is very important. I think there can even be an episode on this topic. My final question is, maybe zooming out a bit and going back to what the European Union is doing, how the Union is shaping or pushing forward sustainable mobility policies?
Well, in general, the European Union plays a role that is called, it's a transport for the European Union is a shared responsibility with member states. So we can say that the European Union plays catalytic role, aggregating role, that defines some regulatory frameworks and funds innovation, research, and testing of new solutions. But it, especially in the framework of urban policy, it has to respect the subsidiarity principle. So, which says that the European level intervenes only in the areas where harmonization or more comprehensive action is needed. Otherwise, it's a priority of the local level to make legislation and make policies, and then the national level, and then the European level. So there are some areas where this is possible and necessary, in line also with some broader frameworks like the Green Deal, for example. There are some actions that are being taken. For example, one is on the 10T regulation, so the transport European network that is let's say, a connection, a comprehensive connection of all the places and countries of the European Union, and making sure that there is a direct link among them, and to close the gap of connections that are not well established. It's a bit complicated to explain, but in few words, it makes sure that there is a seamless connection among all countries of the European Union through infrastructure interventions mainly, but also other cities. In when it comes to urban policy, for example, there's a recent revision that says that the so-called urban nodes that correspond broadly to the main metropolitan areas of the European Union have to adopt a sustainable urban mobility plan by 2027. That means that they have to make sure that they plan mobility in a sustainable way according to the principles that you were discussing before. Another intervention is what also mentioned before, the alternative fuel infrastructure regulation, that is not directly focusing on urban areas, but it has also an implication, because it wants to boost the electric vehicle charging capacity, both at the motorways level, but also at this metropolitan areas level. So that is also something that has an impact on urban mobility. The Intelligent Transport System Directive also, not only about, again, not only about urban mobility only, but mandates the digitalization of some transport data and improves the system integration. So it's also an impact on the transport services and the interoperability of data that make also transport smoother at the urban level. The Social Climate Fund that I mentioned before. So there are different pieces of legislation that even if they are not directly linked to the urban areas, have an impact on it. Besides a lot of activities that are European funded projects that put different cities and industry players together with researchers to innovate about urban mobility solutions, or even just organizations and platforms. For example, Civitas, that is the platform of all the European projects and initiatives focusing on urban mobility, where cities and other players come together and exchange their experiences, because sometimes you learn a lot from someone else that failed or just didn't go through something that they thought would be very innovative, and you learn easier and faster from them than trying it by yourself. So it's also a way the European Union to put together all these different actors and make them exchange on the best and worst practices that help them learn and move forward.
Thank you, Giacomo Lozzi, for being us here today. We had a wonderful conversation. Thank you again.
Thanks for inviting me and for having me. It was very interesting to talk about these things. And I hope to listen to your other podcast very soon. Thanks.
That was Giacomo Lozzi on Sustainable Mobility, exploring accessibility, affordability, and how policy and culture intersect to shape our everyday movements. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave a review, because perspective is everything, and everything is changing.